Good morning and welcome to Family Life. Your hosts, Selena Muhammad and Dr. Nadia Muhammad. This program is sponsored by New Africa Excellent, Rod Speaks. It's me and Allah and Mother Rahim. In the name of Allah, the most gracious, the most merciful, I greet the listening audience in the peace of Assalam Alaikum. This week's discussion is family life. We're going to discuss community events. And we have Dr. Nadia Muhammad here with us today. Welcome, Dr. Muhammad.
Thank you. Thank you. It's good to be back. And also, I'm waiting for the listening audience.
We are going to jump right in, and we're going to discuss an array of community events. And one of the things I wanted to start with today, my family and I recently took a trip to San Diego. And it was beautiful traveling through the country. The sand dunes were just remarkable. You have this sense that you're in the Sahara Desert. It's just absolutely exquisite. And in the mountains, you're traveling in between the mountains, and the elevation is going from approximately 1,000 feet to 10,000 feet. So you're traveling on roads where there's no guardrails. That was fun because you had to really take your time, and you're looking straight down. And you're down about, you know, you're up about 10,000 feet, so that was fun. So then we get into San Diego, and then it was just a weekend trip. And one of the things that was so prominent, you know, whenever you travel, it's an education. And because of COVID, we're not wanting to fly anywhere, so we, you know, are sticking to driving, you know, staying with that format. And we would get up in the morning and walk through the neighborhood. It was downtown in the Bay Area. So fairly safe. And I say fairly because nothing is 100% safe. And, you know, you go with a lot and, you know, you start learning the terrain. And through the walking, it was quite obvious of the homeless everywhere. And then when we started driving, I grew up in the New York metropolitan area, New York, North New Jersey, in that metropolitan area. And you certainly saw homelessness. You certainly see homelessness in New York. But I have never in my lifetime seen homelessness like this. When we would drive in certain areas for miles, I mean, at least a mile, mile and a half going one way, and then on the other side, another mile. I said, I've never seen Skid Row in my lifetime. In fact, I was questioning whether I was in a third world country or not. I've never seen anything like this before. They had little pop tents, and there was just miles and miles of homeless people. And I think the thing, Dr. Muhammad, that was most shocking, all ethnicities. This wasn't African Americans, it was people of all national backgrounds, Latina, Asians. I was shocked. In 2021, to see this type of population. And it was interesting because there was some type to observe that there was some type of caste system, meaning that you had your hierarchy, your, so I was like, what in the world is this?
Mm-hmm.
The caste system allowed some homeless folks to live in outside of parks that could not go into the parks. I'm sure it's because of different mandates, but they were near the parks, that outside of the park. But those particular people, they had top tents, but they had lawn chairs, but you could see the lawn chairs were heavily worn. They had, you know, whatever possessions they had there. You could tell they were homeless, but they weren't on that Skid Row, you know, area. And I'm saying to myself, this is real. I have worked with the homeless populations in various communities, but I never seen anything like this before. Dr. Muhammad, what has your experience been with the homeless?
That what you're saying is, in terms of homelessness, that's something that's on the rise, and I think that's something that we're going to see more of, unfortunately. Because when you think about it from a public health perspective, you think about financial strains like debt or unemployment that are significant risk factors for becoming homeless. And so when that's happening in the society that we're living in, post-COVID-19 pandemic, more people are becoming unemployed, more people are, you know, becoming more in debt, which, again, caused people to, you know, deal with this type of lifestyle. And it's not a lifestyle that people really, really want to be a part of. It really is something that just happens. So you're seeing this in San Diego. You're seeing the rise in homelessness in places like New York. Even my hometown of North Carolina, I live in Knightdale, which is a suburb outside of Raleigh, North Carolina. And I see more and more people holding signs for money for assistance, for financial assistance, because this is a very, very real problem. And let's be frank, everyone, we're all a week or two or a moment or a second from homelessness. So what you're saying, although it's striking, it is a reality, and I think it's something that we'll see more of.
And you're accurate. I was reading several articles this week preparing for this show, and one of the articles speak exactly to what you just mentioned. There was a gentleman who was a professional, made over $100,000 a year as a result of the pandemic, you know, was forced to go to retirement. But he said for him, in fact, there was no retirement, so he needed very much his income. And he was living off of his 401k plan, his savings plan, that was about to deplete. And the author of the article was, you know, giving him some advice on some programs and trying to reach out to ahead of time before he did become homeless.
Right.
And those lines are so long. The wait is so long, you know, people are facing this moratorium, this renter's moratorium that's about to end June 30th. Now, some states, because now they're doing it, they're doing making extensions on a federal level. Many states are trying to get extensions on the state level. The moratorium prevented landlords from evicting tenants who could not pay their rent as a result of the pandemic. So the policy switched to assist initially any renter who was suffering as a result of the pandemic could file for a declaration. But however, that changed. So renters then had to become in need. So all of those initial applications became invalid, okay? According to a 35-page filing of a particular group that was requesting a moratorium extension because the burden shifted from the nation's 30 to 40 million renters to its 10 to 11 million landlords, most of whom own small businesses. Landlords, as a result of this shift, lost approximately $13 billion. Now, here's a note of fact. That $13 billion hasn't gone anywhere. It hasn't gone to the renters. It hasn't gone to the landlords. But the money is allocated. So the funds aren't being processed. So next week, we're going to see what this looks like. So you are exactly right in that millions of people are at the door of homelessness. Many of those people have extended places to go or families to help. So we're going to see a different format in less than a week. $13 billion. So, yes. So we look at, exactly. So we look at this family, and this is America, one of the most so-called powerful countries in the world. And we're looking at third world in this country. You know, we talk about the infrastructure of the family. Let's talk about that for a few minutes, Dr. Muhammad. We just had my 5 days celebrated for Father's Day last week. Happy Father's Day to all those fathers who are involved in their family's life, their children, and their well-being. We had a day modified for Mother's Day to celebrate, but truly, every day is Mother's Day and Father's Day. So we're going to talk about the infrastructure of the family. There was a gentleman, I read an article, and it was so touching. And he said, he was working in the healthcare field, and he said, I have opted not to take the vaccine. He said, because my children need me. And we've discussed this on this show, that's a personal choice, and he reviewed factors, and he decided not to do it. And he and his wife supported one another, and he said he would stay home with the children, and the wife would continue to work, and she was not in a healthcare field, and she was able to work remotely. And he said that they had to tighten up on food, whatever they had to do, they were going to do it because his family needed him. And I thought that was so admirable of someone giving consciousness to create a plan that was going to work for them. So let's talk, Dr. Muhammad, in a few minutes about the infrastructure of family life and how important that is during these times.
And me, like you, I think family is very, very, very important, especially during these times. But you really can't talk about family without talking about how the family was torn down in the Black community among Black people from the inception of slavery and up until now. And so there's a lot of work that needs to be done in our communities because, you know, we still don't know who we are as a people. We're here in the United States, We still see the ravaged beatings of our black men on a daily basis. Our women are just sporting themselves on Instagram and Facebook, and they continue to be naked and don't know their worth and understand who they are as women, and that this nation, any nation, is, you know, is judged by the standard of women. And I think when we're out of that, then we really can't produce a family that's going to be fruitful, and that will leave a generational legacy. So I think when we have to work on the inner demons of ourselves as individuals, where we come from in terms of slavery, and we've made many strides. You know, we have made many strides as a people, and, you know, we, by Allah's grace and permission, we will continue to make strides. And with Islam, we, you know, we have Allah, we have all that we need to continue to grow as a community. But we do have to make a conscious decision to want change. We do have to make a conscious decision to want to better ourselves and our lives. And I think, you know, that, you know, there's a saying, I know we've all heard this before, that, you know, money is the root of all evil. That's been embedded in our society. And so when you think about money and greed and lust, sometimes that takes precedence over the important things. And so when you mention Father's Day, sometimes as a people, as fathers, we think being a father is providing presence instead of being present for our children. Why? It's driven by what? Greed. It's driven by things, and we think our children will love us if we're able to do for them. And that's not what fatherhood is all about. It's about creating memories. It's about teaching, you know, your family morals and values and things of that nature. And so I think that we really have to change our frame of thought as fathers, as mothers, as community leaders, and just focus more on serving Allah first and foremost, and seek His kingdom first, and then all things will be added unto us as a family. So I just wanted to add that. Thank you for asking.
All praises are due to Allah. The actress Monique made a public Twitter statement, and I'll just paraphrase. I'm not going to quote exactly what she said, but I'll paraphrase what she challenged, and I thought it was so interesting. And what she tweeted about was her experience of going out to public places, supermarkets, retail stores of any kind, appointments, whatever it may be. And she spoke specifically to the African American female community. And her concern or her consciousness brought her to comment on the appearance. She said, what is going on? And she referred to the community as queens and kings. And she said, the queens, what, you're coming out of the house with your pajamas on. You're wearing, you know, you right
and
then
the hair,
right in such
at the airport. At the airport, I did. It's in the airport. And we have lost our identity. Exactly.
We do not know who we are.
You're not putting your clothes on now. You have no
right.
Why? And we are queens and kings. What are you doing? People responded, you know. No, she brought up a very conscious problem here.
Right. Monique, that's the name that she goes by, right?
That is the name
Monique.
That she goes by, yes.
And
she
was harassed for making those truthful comments.
She was harassed,
denigrated, and disrespected for being conscious. Now, you know, we're in a society where, you know, when you're being denigrated and put down and let down because you're speaking truth. And so that just goes to show you the mindset that we're in as a people and as women in general. And so I found that to be very interesting that you brought that up, because I read about some of the reactions that she was getting from people, and they were very angry with her. They were very uptight. So you see a lot of backlash for that. upset. They were upset. And I thought she brought up a very valid point. So it's a crucial point in saying, you know, if you are my grandmother, Sister May, you know, my mother, Hadir El Amin Muhammad, Sister Al Zolex, who's in the nation, our father, Abdul Muhammad, is in the nation, Robert Chevenix, but also our grandmother, who lived to be 93 years old, Sister Halima, and she was Sister May. And she used to always say, how do you say you're of God if you don't try to look like God? But she didn't mean that on a physical level. She was talking about behavior, outside appearance. What are your daily acts? You're being represented even if you're not being physically, you don't see a God. You should be able to feel that God's presence in your daily life. And she was adamant about, one of my inspirations is reading Quran every day. And Sister May used to read her scriptures every day, sometimes more than once a day. And she said, this is my spiritual meal. Her spiritual meal. Don't you recall that, Dr. Muhammad?
I certainly do. I certainly do. So that's why I had mentioned earlier that every nation is judged by the standard of women. When you have women who are demoralized and who do not think too much of themselves, then what does that nation look like? Not very good. And that's been the order of the day. In Europe, in the U.S., we look as if we're living in a civilized society. And so we need to do better. We need to do better as women. We need to do better as mothers. We need to do better as friends. And we need to uphold who we are as a people, and that's dignified kings and queens. So it's a very important topic. And I think it's something that we should continue to strive to be better each and every day in our daily lives, be better in general for the sake of being better, not because somebody's going to get you for being better, just for the sake of being better.
I think our brother, may Allah be pleased with him, El-Hajj Malik El-Shabazz, Malcolm X, and again, paraphrasing, noted that very, very existence as he was speaking to international communities. You're only as strong as your women are. So that's a very, very important acknowledgement.
Yes, it's very important. I'll just add, as women, because I would like to tie this a little bit into Father's Day, because sometimes as women we get frustrated with our men, and we are frustrated, we're upset, but as a woman, being a single woman, it's important to try to do your best to raise your sons in a dignified manner, because one day your son is going to become somebody's wife. One day your son is going to become somebody's father. So if you're complaining about your husband, your brother, your cousin, who are male, it really stems from the upbringing of the mother. So if the mother is in the proper mindset, then she will bring up upstanding men in society to know who they are and to be prideful of who they are so they can raise a more decent society. So, you know, charity starts at home and then it's spread abroad. And that's not monetarily they're speaking about. We're talking about spiritually, emotionally. So it starts in the home. You want a better husband? Raise better son. And that's very, very important. So I just wanted to add that comment as well. I'm not being judgmental. I'm not judgmental Saturday. It's very important. We have to start doing better in the home if we want to see a better society.
You're welcome. It's starting better in the home. In a few weeks, we're going to have a husband and wife team on the show. And because one of my passions is to keep educating our children. As we educate our children, you know, we had Brother Ibrahim Sharif on last week, and he was dynamic. And speaking of those programs that have been offered by various corporations, folks specifically of Merck Company Incorporated and their contribution, and Dr. Kivoy Vagelos, and some of the monies that have been extended to young scholars. Their education is real key. We're going to have a husband and wife team on. They've been in the tutoring business for over 20 years, ensuring that our students understand the foundation. I want to speak about my brother for a minute. I'm not going to mention his name because I didn't speak to him prior, but I am going to speak about something he did and posted to Facebook. This is my youngest brother, and I was so touched. I must mention this. And his son was graduating high school, and there was bad weather in the state in which he resided. He had to travel by plane, so he had a plane ticket to travel to see his son's graduation. And the airline canceled the flight due to the weather. And he decided to get a Greyhound bus to go to the son's graduation. And he arrived, and he was able to attend. And I was so elated. But my husband woke me up about 1 o'clock in the morning. This is the day after the graduation, because he's looking at Facebook, so forth and so on. And I said, why are you up? You're supposed to be asleep, get some rest before you go to work. He says, I'm sorry. He says, I have to tell you about my brother made on Facebook. And as a man, he talked about his mistakes in life and how spirit of his children and this one particular son to keep striving for education, where he was there most of his life to guide his life. And he thanked his son on the day of graduation for being able to do this without him. And that just touched my soul. Dr. Muhammad, you mentioned it's not about gifting materialistic to our children, but it's about our presence. And I thank you for that commentary. And I just wanted to speak about that particular example and talk about the mother that birthed this young man for a few minutes, because she was a community advocate. And she completed public service throughout her entire life. And one of the things she did before she retired, Dr. Mahala, because you were physically there, was the food pantry. And that was featured in local newspaper articles. And she was appointed executive director in the Office on Aging, so she would service the population's aging on a daily basis. And one of the things she created was this food pantry, and you were physically there during that time. How exciting was that, Dr. Muhammad, when she was able to launch that food pantry?
Yeah, I think it was a very, very good time to really get home for me, because here you have a woman who basically started off with nothing. She started off with very humble beginnings, and actually she was a woman, and I'm not, you know, this is not to be disparaging or anything like that, but we, you know, had to at one point call on for some governmental assistance, food stamps, and governmental assistance to get us from day to day. And to watch a woman evolve from being a welfare recipient to a welfare director and being able to find it in her heart to give to her community without that bitterness and resentment, it really did come full circle for me. Being on her trials and tribulations was just a testament to who she was as an individual. And so to see that, and for, to see her rise from her young, humble beginnings and basically from her ashes, it really was quite rewarding, and it really instilled a sense of pride in myself to carry on her legacy in some form or fashion in terms of community activism. And just being able to send a kind word or gentle word and just being there for someone else in their time of assistance. And so that was the inspiration for me to move forward and continue to be at the forefront and in the trenches of community activism. But that's my insight on that.
Her proclivity to community service really inspired all of us, all of her children. And I remember starting my daughter off very, very young. And this was through my sister, Fatima. She would be involved in different organizations where she would take food, and she would always invite us, you know, I'm working with this particular organization. And this one particular organization, and this is well over 20 years ago, my daughter was about 3 or 4 years old, was a homeless shelter for women. And this particular homeless shelter would house women. We would donate clothes to the shelter so that women would have attire to go on interviews. So this particular shelter, and I had a realization, my cousin resided in Houston, Texas, and I remember calling him because he would speak about community issues. And we were speaking about the war on poverty specifically. The war on poverty pertains to generational poverty. So you mentioned our mother, Dr. Muhammad, and that she was able to rise from humble beginnings. And I'll tell the audience now, it's through life experience and education. Yes. That propelled her to an officer of the community. So I had this awareness, and I was, my undergraduate program was completed, and I was contemplating starting my doctorate program, of which I eventually started. And I observed this one woman. she was very young. She was 25 and she had 8 children. And the state had taken away the other children, so she had one little boy with her. And she had psoriasis in his head, and he was scratching profusely. And the mother was trying to help him stay calm while she received some instructions that she needed. And my daughter at the time was 3 or 4 years old. She looked up at me and she said, 3 or 4 years old, she could speak. And she said, Mommy, we need to help him. Intuitively, she knew that this little boy, who was just a tad bit taller than her, needed help. So it bothered her and it bothered me, so I went and spoke to the administrators. And it became more to me than just delivering clothes for an interview, because how could she interview? Her state of mind wasn't advanced to the point where she can take care of herself and her child. So I went to the administrator and I said, well, what exactly are you all doing here? And then they had an affinity to my daughter because she was so happy and elated and she wasn't suffering from any ailments. And so she said, come with me. And she took me on a tour. And this is in the heart of Atlanta. And she took me on a tour. And she showed me the shelter areas. She showed me the cafeteria. She showed me the workshop areas. She showed me the clinic where they would, you know, receive referrals. They would get assessments. They didn't get treatment there, but they would get assessments, and these assessments would then send them to a healthcare clinic so that this little boy could be treated. And I felt, you know, I would tons and tons of clothes, and I would donate monetarily to them when I could, because I said, this is such an important effort in the community. And her taking me on that tour, I felt at peace. And when I went home, I explained to my 3-year-old or 4-year-old, she was at the time, that they will get help, that these people are going to help them. So I encourage individuals to find out what's going on locally in your community. And it doesn't have to be much, but just a consciousness and some type of participation of what you can do can make all the difference in the world, especially during pandemic times. I'm going to take a few minutes. This program is sponsored by New Africa Excellence. Murad speaks. Dr. Muhammad, you have to go in a few minutes, but that's if you would share some of your community efforts and explain to the listening audience what was one of your most rewarding.
Okay, yes. Well, thank you. There are many high moments, but I was afforded the opportunity to work with at-risk youth involved in New Jersey. We co-directed the Rites of Passage program, which focused on enlightening and foraging and how important they are in the society and who they are as a people. And so what was rewarding for me was to be able to, at baseline, get individuals enrolled in the program where they were quite withdrawn, didn't know too much about their history, weren't very engaged. And I noticed after the 8-week program, because it was an 8-week program, that our students, 4-week program, and it's from January to June. And I noticed the students who were sort of introverts or sort of withdrawn, that they were more lively, they were more interactive, and they sort of came out of their shell. And so that really brought, it brought tears to my eyes in some instances, because many of these young people, some people, they deal with station, drug use and abuse. Some of these children go to school hungry. And if you just have any type of idea what's sitting up in their minds, it would actually blow your mind. And so when the students will come to the sessions, and we would have sessions like, for instance, we would teach our young people how to set a table. Because if you're going to be dignified in society, you should know how to set a table. You should know how to use a dinner fork. You should know how to use a salad fork. You should know how to use a dessert spoon. So these are the things that we were teaching to our young people, civilization, and for our males, how to be respectful to the young, your young members who are part of the program, the teammates, how to be respectful of women and for the women to be respectful to men. It's just not one-sided. So we taught our young people how to dress, how to act at home, how to act at abroad, you know, abroad, if they were abroad, because although many of those students didn't leave that 5-mile perimeter, we wanted to instill in them that one day you will leave, and when you leave, you need to be able to speak clearly, you need to be able to carry yourself in a dignified manner, and you also need to be able to sit among royalty and dignitaries. And so that was quite rewarding, you know, to see them sort of grow and evolve as individuals. And it really brought a smile to my face. We also taught our young people how to budget, how to open up a bank account, how to write a resume, how to conduct yourself during an interview. And it's the basic tenets of life, how to diffuse, you know, a situation that's gone bad. So we dealt also with conflict resolution. Back in our community in New Jersey at that time, there was lots of gun violence and gangs. Violence and black-on-black crime, and a lot of our young people, unfortunately, were, and still are, were victims of gun violence. Many of our young people lost loved ones to gun violence and other violences that occurred in the community and other infractions. And so we dealt with quite a bit of grief, which was quite sad, but we did a lot of good, too, community service. And what was really rewarding most about it is teaching young people about who they are, their heritage, and their legacy that they could leave, and the changes that they could make an impact on society. And then many of those students came back to thank us for those experiences. Some of those students, they don't have mothers in the home, they don't have fathers in the home, they don't have foster care. And just to add value on some level, it's quite rewarding. And so I will always cherish that in my heart. That's something that I will live with for the rest of my life, and it brings joy to me every time I think about it and speak about it. So thank you for asking that question. Those were the high titles of the program and what we were able to accomplish during that my tenure there. So thanks.
Wonderful. Dr. Muhammad, I know you have to leave. It's always a pleasure to have you here with us. If you would let the listening audience know where they can reach you.
Yes. I can be reached at Dr. Nadia Muhammad. Excuse me, it's Dr. Nadia, D-R-N-A-D-I, 1@gmail.com. That's where I can be reached. But thank you. I always enjoy being on the show. I hope I was able to touch someone's heart, as you're touching my heart right now, just being on the show and listening. And may God continue to bless you. And as I go in peace, and I greet each and every one of you, and wish for peace and blessings of Assalamu alaikum.
Well, you have a blessed day, and thank you for being on today. I'm going to continue. I'm going to recap a very poignant point. You need to know thyself. I'm going to speak of another charity organization I worked with out of Kennesaw, Georgia. And I think they are located out of Marietta. I think their address is Marietta, Georgia. which is literally the next town over from Kennesaw. And my husband and my daughter and I, we would cook meals. We would call ahead of time to find out what the donation levels were, what was needed. The Mus would always tell you what they needed, what they had, and if they didn't need anything at that particular time, we rerouted our donations to other communities, services that was in need. And I remember going to, in Marietta, a drug rehab center, and there was a young man, and we just rang the bell and asked them if they were in need of food. And it was during the holidays, I don't remember which one, Thanksgiving or Christmas. And we cooked food for that particular purpose. And the young man was in a rehab program. This was an elevated program, which means they had been clean for X amount of time. And this gentleman broke down and cried in front of us. And my husband and I looked at each other, and we asked him if he was okay. And he said yes, and he apologized for his emotions. And he said, everyone forgets about us. No one remembers us. And I said, well, beloved, you're remembered today. And it was such a gracious feeling, and to be able to give to folks that were in need. So not too long ago, I received a call. I mentioned that story for a reason. For an individual who works fearlessly in the community to address the needs of families. And she called me and she said, I have a story to share. And it was about Mus Ministries, and I've worked with that organization for over 20 years during my tenure in Georgia. And she said, the administrator of Mus Ministries, and he had shared this with her church. She was so excited. She said, well, the administrator went to his email, and the email said something along these lines as the story was shared with me. You just won the lottery. And being an administrator of a ministry, a number of churches that work together, and my friend went to the particular church where the pastor was the administrator over Mus Ministries. One of the administrators is a collective group of ministers in the community who leads this mission. And he said, lottery, this is scam. This is spam mail. This is some type of scam. I'm just going to ignore this. And he said something told him to open up this particular email. And it was a $5 million grant assigned to him by CEO Amazon founder Jeff Bezos. And he was shocked. And it was interesting because they've been serving the community for over 30 years, maybe even more, but specific programming. And the award was specifically the Day One Families Fund issued annual leadership award to organizations and civic groups doing compassionate work in the community to provide shelter and hunger support to address immediate needs of young families. $5 million. The gentleman's name was the administrator of Must Ministries is Dr. Ike Rakard, president and CEO of Must Ministries. And his quote of receiving this benefit, knowing how many people are desperately seeking help during this very difficult time, our team realizes the impact of this gift as neighbors in need find help and hope through the Day One Families Fund grant. In addition, we are honored to be recognized in this national selection of experienced shelters making a high impact in our community. And I was so elated because when I worked in the school system, specifically there in Cobb County, many families were in need of assistance. And this is during, you know, non-pandemic times. And the need was great. And they provide housing, but at that time, very temporary housing, sometimes just for days. And then the people would have to leave. They could come back, but they would have to leave for an extended period of time to come back and rejoin the program. Well, it's difficult to get back on your feet with minimal access. However, it did serve as a roof over people's heads for a short period of time. Now, Must Ministries is able to extend their housing program. And I think this is where, as a community, our conscience has to be affordable housing. How can we contribute? How can we help support and create programs, even if it's through our own affiliation? The host of this show, not the host, the producer of the show, Maran Muhammad, always say, if we all contribute $1, what can we do? And I think we can do a tremendous amount of things, so it's a good time to mention contemplation of what we can do to aid this housing crisis. It's interesting, not shy and a stranger to this show, one of our best-selling authors, Margaret Johnson Hodge, has been on a few times, and she experienced something being on the soup kitchen lines, of which she's volunteered on several occasions throughout the years. And this one particular community service, she and other church members, and we mentioned this when we interviewed her, but it's a good time to mention it again. We're serving the community food. And one church member thought it upon herself to be disrespectful to the recipients. You, come over here. This is all you can get. be happy with what you can get. And she interceded and said, no, sir, if you would please come forward and tell me what you would like. She treated this gentleman who was homeless dignity and respect. So brothers and sisters, it's very important for us to be conscious of how we treat people. And on this gentleman's face, placated, he started to smile. He felt comfortable to ask for what he wanted. And I think this is imperative. Because this student of life pressed upon hard times, and he had a hostile disposition and then became placated as a result of human dignity. Inspiration, respect for one another, patience, and that humble word, compassionate. And I will end with that key word today of compassion. We first must have compassion for ourselves. And how do we do that? By being consistent. I remember the Imam Waris Abdeen Muhammad, may Allah be pleased with him. It's our awareness and conscience isn't necessarily lacking in Allah. He did not feel that that was the formidable problem. But what he did feel contributing to the problem was the lack thereof consistency. So if we're consistent in our relationship with Allah, whatever that consistency means to you, whatever that language means to you, to stay in touch, whether it's through prayer, whether it's through reading, just to hear that language of the Creator on a daily basis is imperative to our very survival. I thank you humbly for joining us today at Family Life. We look forward to sharing more on a consistent basis to elevate our community's awareness and understanding of what we face today and how we can collectively work together to elevate our circumstances. This program is sponsored by New Africa Excellent, Murad Speaks. Thank you for joining us today. You may reach me at Salima, S-A-L-I-M-A-H, M-O-H-77 @gmail.com. Thank you and assalamu alaikum.